very welcome to the Irish Soundtrack. Fiachna O'Brien, I'm delighted to be with you for this third episode in our celebration of Irish screen music from the early 1900s to the present day. We've been lucky enough to speak to those who've been part of this story, leading lights from the world of music, composition, acting, directing, production, as well as from the world of academic studies. Last week, in the second episode of our series, we looked at the evolution that occurred in our screen music between the 1940s and 1970. From Hollywood coming to Ireland with films such as The Quiet Man and Ryan's Daughter, all the while developing our own unique voice through the extraordinary work of Seán Ó Riada with Misha Éire, Saoirse and much more. So we enter a period now where we see growth in our own Irish film industry, initially making films for ourselves, about ourselves, and as confidence grows over time, achieving extraordinary international success. So we head into the 1970s with Stanley Kubrick, who in 1975 took us back to the 18th century for his highly acclaimed film Barry Lyndon, based on the 1844 novel The Luck of Barry Lyndon by William Makepeace Thackeray. It's set in a small village in Ireland, the story of a young Irish rogue whose fortunes change a number of times during the course of this story. He takes part in a duel, he finds himself homeless, he fights in the Prussian War and manages to marry a rich widow and assumes her late husband's aristocratic title. And as you can imagine, this does not end well. Here's Brian Redden of Darragh Films.
In a recent poll in the Irish Times, Barry Lyndon came out on top as the greatest Irish film of all time. The film itself was beautifully shot and there's fantastic scenes shot all around Waterford, lots of places around Ireland, Carton House as well as in it. And famously, he didn't use lights on it. Famously, the film was lit by candlelight, so it looks beautiful. But the soundtrack on it, he went two ways with it. One was classical music. So the film, it features a lot of music from Handel and Bach and Vivaldi. That makes up a lot of the soundtrack. But then another part of the soundtrack is a nod to the Irish setting of it, performed by the Chieftains, by Paddy Moloney and the Chieftains. So there's songs like Women of Ireland, which is an Ó Riada song, and The Sea Maiden, another piece called Tin Whistles. So Paddy Moloney plays on the soundtrack. So there is quite an Irish vibe to the soundtrack in it, mixed in with the classical music, and it works really, really well. It really adds to the film, I think.
And here is the late, great Paddy Moloney explaining to me a couple of years ago how they came to be involved.
I was running Clatter Records at the time, and I was having a little bit of press reception. The phone rings, pick it up. This is Mr. Stanley Kubrick here. I want to use a bit of your music, and I hadn't a clue who he was at this stage. And Tony Boland was sitting beside me when I put down the phone. I said, can you ring me back Monday? It'd be okay. Give me a call on Monday, you know. And anyway, Tony nearly fell off the chair, you know, and said, you know who that was. So Monday, right enough, he got me phone call and can you come over to see me and want to use 4 or 5 minutes of your music, you know. Eventually, anyway, we got to really got on very well together in Reading, it was, he was living, and started to talk about other pieces, tunes, and that piece now in Wajanwara was on Chieftains 2, I think it was, and made that in, 1968, and he loved that piece.
Thank you. The late, great Paddy Maloney, Jim Lockhart of Horslips, Fiach Moriarty and myself playing in Wide Zanwara, The Sea Maiden, which appeared in Stanley Kubrick's 1975 film Barry Lyndon. The film was nominated for 7 Oscars and won 4, one of them for the music. Music is used to great effect to set the scene for different worlds that our protagonist moves through. Now, when the story is situated in Ireland, we hear authentic Irish music. Here's John O'Flynn, Associate Professor of Music in Dublin City University, and author of Music, The Moving Image and Ireland.
When we think about music for the more Irish-themed part, the first part of the film, that's quite radical because although we might think of traditional music as being something very old, in fact, what was represented there was a very modern music, the Irish music of the 1970s, which basically, following Oireadh and Ceoil Tóirí Chulainn, some members of that become members of the Chieftains. And so it's a sound that's continuous to that and also is reflective maybe of the big traditional groups that would come a little bit later, like the Bothy Band and so on. So it's really an important part. I mean, there's one stage where we do see the musicians performing when there's that famous outdoor dance scene and they're playing the piper's maggot jig. But then there's other parts where it's not source music where we can see the music being played, but it's also underscore in there. So what that did for the audibility of Irish music at that time, rather than the quiet man type of Irish music, was quite groundbreaking.
And in contrast, European Baroque music sets the scene for the upper echelons of European society. George Friedrich Handel's Saraband, which is the main theme to Stanley Kubrick's 1975 film Barry Lyndon. By the late 1970s, there was an appetite to move away from the version of Ireland that we'd seen in cinemas throughout the 1960s, and this was reflected in the work of directors Bob Quinn, Joe Comerford and Cathal Black, and through the music of Roger Doyle. Here's Sinéad O'Flynn of the Irish Film Institute.
A musician whose work really defines or is very clearly associated with a particular period is Roger Doyle and his work with filmmakers who in retrospect are called the new wave of Irish filmmakers in the 1970s and 80s. So Roger worked with Bob Quinn and with Cathal Black and with Joe Comerford, often using kind of electronic scores and Fairlight synthesizers and so on, to create a sense of Irish cinema that was quite contrary to what had gone before in the 50s and 60s, where you had American filmmakers coming in, incorporating traditional Irish tropes in the scores they were making. So then Roger Doyle and his work suggests a modernity and perhaps an alternative aural sense of Ireland that is very distinctive.
In 1978, Bob Quinn produced and directed the first feature-length Irish language film. It was also the first recipient of a film script grant from the Arts Council of Ireland. Cyril Cusack plays a Connemara poutine maker. His two gophers are played by Neil Tobin and Donal McCann. There are comic moments amidst the bleak backdrop and harsh living conditions, but ultimately things end in a fittingly dark way. Here's Ruth Barton, Professor of Film Studies in Trinity College Dublin.
If you go back to Poitin, Bob Quinn's Irish language film, first of all, okay, there's a long gap between Poitin and Colin Kuhn in terms of Irish language filmmaking, but he was really quite, you know, it's sort of extraordinarily revolutionary to make an Irish language film. And what he was doing in Poitin was he was, the whole time, it really is the anti-quiet man film. You know, he's subverting that romanticisation of the west of Ireland. There's a moment in Poitin where in the cottage, the woman of the house, she turns on the radio and it plays what the audience is led to believe is a traditional Irish song, but is in fact a traditional North African song that Quinn has slipped into the film to subvert our notion of what a traditional Irish song is.
Roger Doyle's theme for Bob Quinn's documentary Atlantean. And here is legendary composer and a C of S donor, Roger Doyle, talking about how he didn't compose the score for Poitin.
I had worked with Bob on a few of his films before that, and there was one he wanted me to do called Poitin, and I said music will ruin this film, and I talked myself out of a job. He later got Bill Whelan to do it about 25 years later. There was so much silence in it, and I thought if you put in any music there, you're going to not only break the silence, but you're going to kind of inform it, you're going to steer it in a way that I couldn't imagine it working. If any music came into any of those scenes, I thought that'll kill it. You need the silence. And the silence of the West of Ireland, you just need that silence. And he said, OK, we'll have no music.
And here is Bill Whelan talking about the score that he did compose for Poitin.
Well, what happened with Poitin was that originally, I think Bob Quinn was convinced not to have a score on the film. So he didn't have a score. And for many years, the film had no score. And then he got a brand new cut of it, a new print of it, 35mm print was generated for him. And he thought at that time it might be good to put a score on it. So he approached me to do it, and I did the score. It's interesting to work with a film that for many years has had no score. And for me personally, to work with Bob, who I knew, but also to work with actors, to be looking at actors who I knew, like Cyril Cusack, Neil Tobin, Mick Lally, Donald McCann, you know, all these actors, and who I knew when were dead. It was a curious kind of emotional experience, and then to create a score that fitted to a film that in a kind of backwards way, and of course there was lots of dialogue, and you know, you had to stay out of the way of the dialogue, and yet to create a score that would support the mood of the film. So I used I used kind of banjo, and I used trad singer, and I used, you know, I tried to stay within the idiom, but also, you know, used obviously contemporary techniques as well. It was a very enjoyable project, I must say, and I think Bob was happy.
The sublime voice of Cathchina Ní Cheannamh/Bhainn with Bill Whelan's score for Bob Quinn's film Poitin. A Bob Quinn film for which Roger Doyle did compose the music, was Budawani, an absolutely beautiful score for what was a challenging story at the time, filmed on Clare Island and released in 1986. Here's Brian Redden.
It was a story of a priest on a remote island who has an affair with his housekeeper and they have a child. So back then, in the 80s, making a film about that was blasphemy. So it was really, really controversial. An interesting film because Bob Quinn contrasts life on the island where Donald McCann, who plays the priest, lives. And that's all shot in black and white. It's kind of bleak and it's shot in black and white. And then when he comes to the mainland, it's shot in colour. So it's a mixture of colour and black and white. But music is really vital to that because it's a silent film. Even though it was made in the 1980s, it chose not to have any dialogue in it. So when they do talk, the characters, it comes up in caption cards, title cards, like all silent films. So the music is vitally important to that, to try and move the narrative along and try and create the atmosphere and help the atmosphere. So music is vitally important.
The soundtrack to Budawani is remembered not just for how it enhanced Bob Quinn's film, but as a work in its own right. Here's its composer, Roger Doyle.
So when it came to Budawani, Bob said, I want a 70-minute soundtrack. Nobody says a word that you can hear. When somebody speaks, you see a caption just like the old black and white movies. It will be shot in black and white. And we're going to play with that idea that the music does as much of the heavy lifting of telling the story as the visuals does. And Bob always said the visuals are nothing without music. They inform the visuals. That's what he always told me and what he believed in from early days. So I sketched out a few pieces on the piano and he'd say, no, that doesn't suit. No. Finally, I did one with three chords and this little melody on the top. He said, yep, go with that. And basically, those chords and that melody were the theme and variations for pretty much the 70 minutes of it. I hired a studio in Sandymount for 6 weeks, went down every day on my bike, not knowing what I was going to do that day, but it happened anyway. Just sit down. The amazing thing was that I had a little video screen on top of the piano, so as the scene was playing, and I would be playing the piano and looking at the screen and doing the timings, looking at the screen. And that's how we fitted it all together in short bits and crossfades and so forth. But it did end up as 70 minutes of music. And I really feel I caught the atmosphere of that film, that theme and variation. I mean, I feel the emotion of it even today, of those chords and those melodic variations. Something was caught there, whether it was the spirit of Clare Island or where it was set, I don't know, but or the sadness of the story, the tragedy of the story. There's something in the music, even though I say it myself, maybe it's even beyond what I was aware of, there's a spirit in that music which really does something truthful.
Indigenous Irish film production really got going in the 1980s. There was a new wave of Irish filmmakers and a more introspective feel to the films that were being made. There was certainly no desire to present an image of rolling hills and harp playing. This was harsh reality. There's no better example than the television film The Ballroom of Romance, directed by Pat O'Connor in 1981. A stark look at the social life in rural Ireland in the 1950s, Brenda Fricker plays Bridie, who's still attending the Ballroom of Romance after many years hoping for a husband, week in, week out. But all the good men are either taken or have emigrated.
Watch that Fogarty. Is he married?
Oh, he's married all right, full of propositions. A hard case.
You could tell he was married the way he danced with you. Who's that you got, Bridie?
I don't know his name. Are you good at the foxtrot?
He's good looking.
Are you thinking of emigrating?
Oh, I hope he won't go.
I can't stop them.
Did one go on you, Bridie? Did one emigrate you were fond of?
You can't stop things happening.
Music is used to evoke the times, whether it be the music in the background on the radio, or the lads cycling drunkenly to the ballroom singing Ghost Riders in the Sky. The music in the film is for the most part played by the band in the ballroom, the Romantic Jazz Band, and their lack of passion mirroring the air of desolation. Mick Lally plays the part of the drummer, who at one point sings Goodnight Irene, and Anthony Chambers is the saxophone player whose haunting version of Danny Boy really captures the feeling of the time. Pat O'Connor then went on to direct Cal in 1984. Here's Brian Redden.
A lot of filmmakers obviously looked to the north for inspiration for stories, and Cal is one of the better ones, I think, because it's not necessarily a political film, it's a love story, but it's set against the political backdrop of the north. And it stars John Lynch as an IRA man who's involved in the murder of an RUC man. He's the getaway driver, and he's kind of racked with guilt as a result of the murder, and he ends up by chance meeting and falling in love with the widow of the guy whose death he was responsible for, played by Helen Mirren, and they start a love affair. But obviously he's got a big secret that he doesn't want to tell her, and the film is kind of based around that. Does he tell her? What will happen when she finds out? So it's a love story, and both Helen Mirren and John Lynch are absolutely superb in it, and it's brilliantly directed by Pat O'Connor. And interestingly, he didn't get an Irish musician to write the soundtrack for it, but he got an English musician to write it. He got Mark Knopfler to do it from Dire Straits, and it's very Irish. The soundtrack of it is very... It's a brilliant soundtrack. A really, really brilliant soundtrack. One of the songs on the soundtrack is called Irish Boy. And it's instrumental, obviously. But it's a beautiful piece of music composed by Mark Knopfler. Absolutely gorgeous.
We are now well used to hearing well-known artists in TV series, or indeed coming to know great artists through television shows. But back in 1982, this was new territory. Harry's Game was a British TV miniseries about the assassination of a British cabinet minister by a member of the IRA. The theme from Harry's Game was written and performed by Clannad and became an international hit, the only British hit single to have been sung entirely in Irish. Here's Moya Brennan of Clannad.
It was quite amazing, actually. Gerard Seymour, who wrote Harry's Game, heard our sixth album, Fuam, and there was a track in it called Warag's the Hoary Alley, a Scottish Gaelic song. And he loved just the feel of it. And he wanted, when he was talking to Yorkshire TV, he wanted the music for Harry's Game to be different, not the normal, you know, with the orchestra and the whole thing and everything. So they arrived over in Dublin to show us. It wasn't edited at the time, but part of the Harry's Game. And we hadn't a clue. We thought it was a documentary about Northern Ireland. We hadn't a clue. But what attracted us to it, first of all, was the fact that, you know, us being from Donegal, it's very dangerous to become politically involved because, you know, it just were strategically where we lived. But what we loved about it was the fact that it was really about two guys on both sides of the divide, and they both die at the end. And it was kind of a sadness of, like, you know, nobody wins in in war, you know, you have to, you know what I mean? Just people just killing each other all the time, you know what, you know. And so it was really the first attempt to write. Kieran and Paul and myself got together in Paul's house and with a Prophet 5 and a little tape recorder. And Kieran opened this book, old Sean Fochla, and he came across Imahoy Shira Shir, Adanakiriyaw and Yala Hasingvian, and we just loved the words.
This was certainly not to be the first time that Irish music was used to accompany stories about the Troubles. In fact, the theme from Harry's Game was used again in 1992 in Patriot Games and introduced Clonmacnoise to an American audience. The Troubles featured in many films throughout the 1980s, produced at home and abroad, but some of them were not actually about the conflict. Here's Neil Jordan.
I used to play with Niall Stokes in this band, and we used to travel up and down, you know, college places in Derry and places like that. And we'd travel back at night, and it was quite a weird time, you know, and you'd come to roadblocks and all that. So I wrote this story that was like, basically, had no political context whatsoever, but it was about these musicians almost like peacocks, you know what I mean, and the attraction of violence, you know. And, you know, I wrote it and showed it to John, and he liked it, and I showed it to Channel 4, and Channel 4 had just set up, and they liked it. Eventually, I got to make it, and we made it, and there was a lot of controversy.
And that film was Angel, produced by John Borman. It told the story of Danny, the saxophone player in a show band played by Stephen Ray. Danny is introduced as an easygoing sort of character whose whole life and personality has changed from the moment he witnesses the murder of a young girl in a ballroom. His search for vengeance fuels his demise. Rather than the film just having a soundtrack, music is used to tell Danny's story through the changes in his own playing. As everything becomes more and more disjointed, as he free falls into delusion and violence. John O'Flynn.
Neil Jordan has a background in theatre, he's a background as a musician, and this is really interesting and obviously he's a screenwriter and a writer. So he brings all of these, I think, to many of his films and soundtracks. He did engage score composers, but I think what's probably more interesting about Neil Jordan is not the score composers, but his use of pre-existing song.
And what better example of this than The Crying Game, where the title track is used throughout to illustrate how the story is unfolding. The orchestral score and arrangements are by composer Anne Dudley. At the start of the film, we hear The Crying Game sung by Kate Robbins. As the film progresses, we hear Dave Berry's version. And the film closes with a Pet Shop Boys production of the same track with Boy George on vocals.
No one there is to know about the crying game. I've had my share of the crying game.
This new wave of directors, as they've been referred to, were all linked by their focus on life on the fringes of Irish society. Personal stories set to the backdrop of the political and religious climate of the time. Neil Jordan was the scriptwriter on the film Traveller, directed by Joe Comerford. The story of an arranged marriage within the Traveller community, within the context of the political situation in the North. Comerford cast amateur actors, including Ilan Piper, Davy Spillane, who also provided the soundtrack. Thank you. Comerford's work again focused on the Troubles in Reefer and the Model, released in 1988. It tells the story of an ex-IRA man, Reefer, and a pregnant drug addict in recovery that he named the Model. The Connemara landscape gives some respite to the gritty reality of the action, but there's no romance here. The soundtrack was provided by Johnny Doohan and features the vocals of the amazing Dolores Keane.
Then I awoke and it was gone, but in its place I found the sun.
For some it's chess, for some it's football or hurling, for others it's stamp collecting, but for Connie Kiernan and Michael Donoghue, recreation means riding the wall of death. It's putting it mildly to say that having your own personal wall of death is unusual, so how did it come to happen?
Yep. I just seen a film like a few years ago that had a wall of death in it, and just said it couldn't... can't be impossible, you know.
Yeah, what film was it? You remember it vividly, do you?
Yeah, I do. Just remember that wall of death, and Elvis Presley was down in it.
You figured if Elvis could do it, you could do
it. Yeah, yeah, it was.
Pat Kenny reporting on a story back in 1979, which gave Irish cinema some light relief in 1986 when Peter Ormerod directed Eat the Peach, about two unemployed fellas from Granard who built their own wall of death.
It's simple. It's the centrifugal force keeps you up, see?
What's that exactly?
Well, it's all to do with G-forces.
700!
When this is shown on television, it could take off.
Well, it's a wall of death, for God's sake. They don't go on trees, you know.
And what about the speed on the wall?
I told you, 40.
Is that miles or kilometres?
Well, it doesn't matter. We haven't got a speedo anyway.
May the Lord bless this wall and protect all those who ride within it.
The film was funny and hopeful amidst the reality of unemployment at the time. And the soundtrack was composed by Donal Lunny, the title track written by Paul Brady. So eat the peach before the moment passes and is out of reach. Will you stop the start of danger? In 1989, Jim Sheridan released My Left Foot, the story of Dublin writer and painter Christy Brown, played by Daniel Day-Lewis. The film was critically acclaimed and the first Irish-produced film to achieve international box office success. It went on to win two Oscars, and the soundtrack was composed by the legendary American composer Elmer Bernstein, famous for so many classic film scores such as The Magnificent Seven and The Great Escape. Here's Jim Sheridan.
He just got My Left Foot, loved it, composed everything for it, and all of it's great, except I didn't like one cue, but I didn't have the nerve to tell him. And it was the fight cue, which I didn't really like, because I just thought it took a scene that was already a little bit Hollywoody and probably pushed it a bit more Hollywood. But I don't think anybody other than me ever noticed that. But that's the kind of feeling that you have when you're, you know, a director. What's impossible to understand about film is that essentially, for somebody like me, I'm not trying to create a visual space and a kind of feast for the eyes. I'm just kind of reaching for an emotion that I want to drill into the audience's head. And maybe that's a weakness, but that's the way I am. So I'm making boxes of emotion, or time capsules of emotion, and trying to just get it exactly right. And because emotions are invisible, the visible is the danger. I know that sounds contradictory, but anything that draws too much visual awareness to it kind of makes you go, I'm not sure. You know, you're taken out of the scene a little bit and you're not sure of the emotions. And that's a disaster for me. So the music has to suit the emotion for me.
Elmer Bernstein had a long personal relationship with Ireland and was by all accounts interested in the music and the politics. He was a patron to the youth orchestra that a young Emer Noon set up, and he encouraged Bill Whelan to set up the Irish Film Orchestra, which went on to record many international film scores. Bill Whelan conducted the recording of the score for My Left Foot. Here's Bill.
One of the things that Elmer used in My Left Foot was the Ond Martino, which is this strange kind of instrument, like a theremin, you know, it creates this very ghostly kind of sound. And if you listen to the score of My Left Foot, you will hear that very strongly represented in the score. And it gives it a kind of, you know, it's funny. It's not referential in the way that, let's say, a set of pipes would pull you into a particular location or a whistle or whatever. It's a very, very, it's almost ghostly or but quite a spiritual sound, and he brought in a specialist to play the Ond Martino on My Left Foot, which is the first time we'd ever heard it. I mean, it's an extraordinary instrument.
Elmer Bernstein also composed the score for The Field in 1990, Jim Sheridan's film adaptation of the John B. Keane play of the same name. Here is Jim.
I think Elmer was always orchestral, but I think he did realise that the pipes would add a lot to The Field. Yet there's moments in The Field where it's a little bit, it's brilliant and I love the Dord Elmer. It's a little bit Hollywoody, you know what I mean? You can hear a sound that comes from, you know, it's big orchestra sound for a big American movie, you know, and to try and keep that within the frame of The Field, that was difficult enough. But I love the soundtrack that Elmer did for that, and we got on very well. But by the time I got to In the Name of the Father, we had Trevor Jones who was doing Elmer's job. But it didn't make sense to me to just have all this orchestral stuff because it just felt like so old-fashioned, you know? So, you know, Gav came along with this thing of big drum beats, you know, from the north, you know? Like Protestant 12th of July parade-type drums. And, you know, and Gav doing his almost rap-like In the Name of the Father, You Drifted Away, you know. That really worked, you know. It set a theme, it set a boom. You know, you're not watching a normal movie now. You're in a different space. The only times I'm happy with soundtracks in movies is when I know exactly what I'm going to use. And so then I'm kind of filming it and cutting it to a sound in my head. In the Name of the Father, where the Hendrix track Voodoo Child comes in. And to me, that's like one of the great record soundtracks. Probably hasn't been ever repeated at that level, that Hendrix was just so different to everybody else, you know. Like, you can't even compare him to Eric Clapton, or he's incomparable. He's so crazy and so out there. And that suited me a lot for the soundtrack to the opening of In the Name of the Father.
...1993 saw the release of In the Name of the Father, the powerful telling of the story of the Guildford Four. Gavin Friday was working on the film as music supervisor, but ended up writing songs for the score. Here's Gavin.
He had employed a guy called Trevor Jones, who I think Daniel Day-Lewis brought in from The Last of the Mohicans movie. And he brought me up to London and said, listen to his music and tell what do you feel? And it felt completely beautiful, but maybe too beautiful for the heavy content of the movie. And Jim was very frustrated, and it wasn't going well. So he took me aside, and at this period I was working with the great Morris Caesar, and he says, Gav, can you and Morris write a song or something, but I want to open the movie with a bomb. How would you make a bomb go off musically? And it's an Irish bomb in England. And that was the pitch. So, Jim is, it's this inarticulate speech of the heart that he comes with, but it's so articulate because he gives you all this imagery and feeling. And I'd been involved with the making of the movie, and the movie's so percussive, all the bin lids and, you know, guns and noise. And it's sadly, you know, Protestant versus Catholic. So I just started really simply, myself and Morris, let's loop a Bowron and let's loop a Lambeg and let the Catholic drum and the Protestant drum beat the hell out of each other. Winter.
Sinead O'Connor singing You Made Me the Thief of Your Heart from Jim Sheridan's In the Name of the Father. Gavin Friday and Morris Caesar worked with Jim again in 1997 when they composed the score for The Boxer, again focusing on the Troubles, but this time during the peace process with a love story to the four. The music reflects the emotions and mood within the film rather than symbolically representing the political situation through Irish references or instrumentation. In contrast to this a year earlier, Irish traditional music was used in the film Some Mother's Son to represent the divide in the north. This heartbreaking story, directed by Terry George, tells the story of two prisoners on hunger strike in the Mays prison from their mother's perspective. We're going to hear from Aidan Gillen, who played one of the hunger strikers, but first, Ruth Barton.
Helen Mirren plays the mother of one of the hunger strikers, and Fionnuala Flanagan plays the mother of another hunger striker. The two mothers who are come from really, really different backgrounds. And Helen Mirren is a school teacher. And in it, there's a sequence that was very controversial at the time where she is watching the children perform traditional Irish dance and the camera focuses on their feet and the Irish music is playing in the background and you see their dancing feet, but it intercuts it with an IRA bombing. So it's making a kind of subliminal and not very subtle association between something violent in Irish music and therefore in Irish culture, if you like, and that eruption into the present day troubles. And for many people that was really quite a problematic association. There was quite a lot of criticism of the use of music in that scene.
Because I remember when I first saw that scene of David O'Hara and myself scuttling through the undergrowth with a rocket launcher with the charred Irish music gathering pace underneath, I wasn't quite sure what I thought about it. But
it seemed appropriate, you know. Also the intercutting with the girls dancing. But, you know, that's what it's about, you know. And that's, you know, what... You know, the world that those people are from is soundtracked by that music, you know, for better or worse. And, you know, it's nice that we're not really there anymore. Even at the time, which was 94, 95, the idea of making films about the conflict, you're just wondering, are you pouring fuel on the fire? But of course, Terry would say, this isn't a film about continuing the conflict, it's a film about, you know, resolving it.
Some Mother's Son was Bill Whelan's first fully self-composed film score. His emotive orchestral score features traditional percussion and instrumentation and a haunting song called The Seabird, sung by Eleanor McAvoy.
I dream of a seabird as it opens its wings to the gale.
Now, we can't talk about Irish music soundtracks without heading back to 1991 when Alan Parker came to town.
Hey, what's this?
What's what?
Have you got soul? If so, the world's hardest working band is looking for you. Contact Jay Rabbit.
Well, what kind of music are we going to be playing, Jimmy? Soul.
Soul?
That's what you've got to measure up to, lads.
Well, like, maybe you're a little white.
Here's Brona Gallagher, who starred as Bernie McLaughlin in The Commitments.
Soul music has always been a massive part of Irish culture. So you had constant bands touring that were just, you know, blew people away. Massive brass sections, you know, incredible front people. And my mum and dad always remember the Sailors coming into Derry, and they couldn't believe the quality of these bands playing all the hits that were out at that time and all the soul music. So I think it was just, you know, it's music that people have always identified with in Ireland. So, you know, coming into a subject like The Commitments, when Roddy Doyle wrote the book about The Commitments, he was the one who said, you know, we are the blacks of Europe and we identify with that music very much so. And I remember reading the book and going, I have to be on that film.
The Commitments may or may not have reflected what was going on in Ireland musically at that time. And it depended on what band you were in, but it conveyed the passion and talent that exists here and our inextricable link with music. It was also hugely successful. Here's Brona again.
I know that it started up after The Commitments and Angel and My Left Foot. So Jim Sheridan, Neil Jordan, David Putnam and Alan Parker, with the success of their movies in the early 90s, it ignited the Irish film industry again.
Meanwhile, on the telly... Here is singer, composer, actor and director Maria Doyle Kennedy.
My favourite Irish soundtrack of anything is the soundtrack that Neil Hannon wrote for Father Ted. The songs in it are such genius. I mean, the theme song is so lovely. You hear it coming on and it's so comforting and hilarious at the same time. It reminds you of all the old Irish soap operas that your parents or grandparents even might have watched. But all the songs that Neil wrote as well, they seem to come from the same place of inspiration that the show did. They're so tender and joyful, as well as being absolutely hilarious. And often my family would just sing My Lovely Horse to each other around the house because it still makes us laugh so much.
In 1995, Pat O'Connor chooses American composer Michael Kamen to score his film adaptation of the Maeve Binchy novel Circle of Friends. It is, however, with the closing song that features two legendary Irish artists that it's best remembered. Here's Aidan Gillen, who starred as Aidan Lynch in the film, and Moya Brennan, who sang the song.
Pat O'Connor invited me to Pinewood to see the finished product, and he screened the whole film for me. You know, I was on my own in the room in Pinewood, and for me, this is... huge, you know what I mean? Even being in Pinewood. So I hadn't heard the music, you know, it's Michael Kamen, it's not going to be there on the day. But it was the song at the end, over the credits, that really surprised me. I wasn't expecting to hear it, wasn't expecting anything. I wasn't expecting to hear Shane McGowan and Moira Brennan in what I kind of regard as one of my favourite Shane McGowan songs. I know it's himself and Michael Kamen are credited with writing it, Kamen wrote the music. But it's a song that really stands up.
It was suggested that myself and Shane McGowan would be a nice combination, if you could call it nice, because I suppose I was known as a wispy kind of soft singer, and with his raspness and everything. So, you know, I was thrilled to be asked, first of all. Michael Kamen wrote the music and the melody, but I think Shane wanted to change a couple of things, so I think he became one of the writers on it as well. But Trevor Horn was brought in to record it. It was great fun. Trevor was very much, he wanted me there every time Shane was there, so he'd understand him and everything. But I think that the combination of our voices, the melody, you know, and working with Trevor, he really brought together the combination really well. It was fantastic to do. And I was thrilled to do it. And when I met Maeve Binchy at a book fair, I went up and introduced myself. And she says, oh, she says, myself and my husband listen to that song every day, she says, for our coffee. It was lovely to hear.
You fill my sweetest dream.
Join me again next week when we will look at the Irish soundtrack from the year 2000 right up to the present day.
Lying in my lonely bed, thought about you.